We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast. Gunners tear blades to pieces is what we're calling this one after Arsenal smash another team, Sheffield United, 6-0 away from home. And to delight in it, discuss it, Neil Shah with me, how you doing?
I love that intro. I love it. Oh my God, Jack, what is going on with us? This is one of the best spells of football I've ever seen from our club. 100%.
Beautiful. 31-3 since the turn of the year in terms of goals scored and goals against. We're now a plus 45 goal difference. We're the highest scorers in the league. We're the best in terms of goals conceded in the league. I think we've conceded two less than everyone else. Obviously, the biggest proponent is the points total. We're still a couple points behind in that regard. But of course, since the turn of the year, where we were five, even eight points, I think at one stage possibly, behind sort of the league leaders, it's been a fantastic return since the turn of the year. It's all about keeping it up. Long way to go, but we've done fantastic. And I mean, in terms of the goal difference, I don't want to say we've got breathing room, but you know, you're 10 goals ahead of Manchester City. And I think maybe five or six in terms of Liverpool. These are teams that are free-flowing. You know, people were laughing at Arsenal earlier in the season in terms of the amount of goals we'd score, and we can only score from set pieces. Yep. Well, now, currently, we're the top goal scorers by some distance in the league. Obviously, a long way to go. They're both very capable of putting in results like this. So I wouldn't say it's not turnable, but it's really quite a powerful thing for us when you watch the game. I think if you take anything more from it, obviously the other teams having won, you maybe look at that as possibly being an extra point even. You know, you don't know, but possibly if it keeps going in that direction. And that is quite incredible, to be honest. I mean, the goal difference is quite incredible. Even last season, I remember thinking, maybe even at this stage, like, I'll forget about the goal difference. You know, we're never going to be at City's goal difference, but the way we are at the moment.
And how many years has it been since we've actually been ahead of them? Because they've been dominating goal difference for what, 10 years, maybe more now? It's been ridiculous. To be up there with them or even ahead of them at this stage of the season, that is unheard of, Jack. So we're doing tremendously well. And just quickly tell me if you know, the shots that we've allowed on target are ridiculously low, aren't they, in the last four or five games?
Yeah. It's not many, is it? We've allowed, obviously, this game we allowed a 0.23 XG. One thing I would say is they had one chance, which was through on goal. I'm not certain it was offside, but it got given as offside. It was a great save by Raya. But other than that, they had four shots, zero on target. So they didn't have a shot.
Yeah, there you go.
They didn't have a chance.
On target ones, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Are very low at the moment. Yeah. In the last four or five games, I think it is, Jack.
Yeah, yeah. We've allowed a 2.0 XG in the last seven games.
Wow.
And to put that in perspective, I believe Liverpool allowed about a 1.3-ish against Nottingham Forest alone. So that's what we've allowed. And obviously that includes teams like Liverpool, like West Ham in those seven games. So a lot of people saying we've had an easy run, this, that, and the
Newcastle.
Other. It's been hard game. Newcastle, there's been hard games within there. You know, it's not like it's been a really easy run. You know, yeah, Newcastle, West Ham, Liverpool, I wouldn't regard those as easy games at all on paper.
No.
So it's been really fantastic. I mean, I want to talk, the lineup's unchanged. I want to talk about the players that came back into the squad, maybe towards the end of the podcast when they actually came on the pitch, talk a little bit about what their return might mean and you know, how they looked and stuff like that. But Neil, how did you feel going into the game? Because everyone else had won. And personally, I don't really mind playing Burst or, like, I do feel we play quite a lot of games after, you know, City and Liverpool. at the moment. I don't know if that's true or not, but I do feel that. But certainly when it's not even on the weekend and it's a Monday night, I don't know about you, but I absolutely hated it. I mean, I've got to say, I mean, once I saw the results, the other games, I just wished we'd played on Sunday. I was like, I cannot wait for this game at this point. I just really want to know if we're going to turn up. And I know it's Sheffield United away, and they're probably the, well, most definitely probably going to go down, the poorest side in the league, etc. But away from home, it's never that easy. I'll give you an example. I think Man City scored in the last minute at Sheffield United, last couple of minutes, to win 2-1 this season. I'm almost certain that's true. And they went absolutely mental. You know, they were 1-1 for a little bit. They went absolutely mental. I think Liverpool won 2-0 by scoring late on as well at Sheffield United. So not always the smoothest ride anyway, you know. I just wonder how you felt going into it, Neil. Did you have the same sort of apprehension? Probably knowing you, confident. And how does it feel? It feels weird. It's so close up the top that I'm actually really quite anxious every time our games are coming, to be honest. And I'm not typically like that. Like, I quite look forward to the games and stuff like that. But I have that sort of underlying feeling over the last few weeks, really, which we put to bed within 4 minutes, to be honest. But how did you feel leading into it? And talk a little bit maybe about the start that we had, which was absolutely lethal, really.
I don't blame you for feeling apprehension, because I think Arsenal's a club that always makes their fans feel that way, even in-game anyway. We always seem to do it. We're notoriously known to do it the hard way for me. We never win easy, do we? We always make the fans suffer that much. So I understand that. But no, for me, I didn't feel anything, any anxiety. I just thought that if we were as clinical as we'd been and we were professional and didn't suffer any injuries, I'm glad to hear that. I think Martinelli will be all right. Maybe he might miss Saturday's game, but I think he might be all right, but we'll see. But you know, if everything like that was okay, I didn't fear anything, to be honest. I think we were talking on a WhatsApp group. I think on the pod I predicted last time, I think we'd win 3-0, but however, I did not expect this. Now, I think I've put a tweet out saying that I'm a fairly optimistic fan. I just did not expect this. This is unbelievable. 7 games now, and we have... All right, okay, Forest 2-1 and Liverpool 3-1. That's expected. You know, they're tough grounds to go to. And obviously, Liverpool is a tough game, team to play home or away. But our last 3 away games, and that's setting a record, by the way. That's the first team in the top flight since, I think, Burnley did it in 1961, they'd done it. But in the Premiership, certainly, the first team to win 3 games in a row away, scoring at least 5 goals. It's unbelievable. I mean, that just shows how amazing we are. And the other thing is, you know, just talking about the defence, my goodness me, allowing only not even a handful of shots on target in the last few games. You'd expect that in the last one game, maybe, if you've had a good defensive performance, not in the last few games. The balance and the way the team are playing is so spot on. I personally, Jack, I've been following Arsenal since the 70s. I've never seen a spell of football like this, not even in Wenger's era. I'm going to have to say it, and that could be blasphemy for a lot of people. I've not seen it, not this good, not the way we've been playing. And that goes down to what your question was, the team, the lineup. There's nothing wrong with it. Do not change it. We were talking off air about Jesus coming back and Partey coming back. At the moment, they don't start for me. They really do not. Havertz has been extraordinary. I think he's involved in so much, not only of the goals that we do score, but the goals that we don't score and the chances that we create. But he's always there and thereabouts doing something. He really causes the defenders problems. They're distracted by him, and that has been allowing the others, Odegaard, Saka, Martinelli, a little bit more freedom. Because do you remember the first half of the season? Saka was getting really mullered by all the defenders, 2 or 3s on him. Martinelli probably wasn't the player he'd been last season, because I felt that he still had his pace and dynamism, but maybe his final touch, his final cross in or cutbacks weren't quite working as well. And I just feel that all of them, including Odegaard and that Odegaard-White-Saka triangles are coming back. White has been great. No, but he doesn't get much of a mention. But he was powering down that right hand side, and he was causing them so many problems. But I think Havertz, inclusion of Havertz at the nine, which you always were saying right from literally the first few games, he's better in that position rather than in midfield. He's much better there. And I think, let's not forget Jorginho as well. He's working really well in that midfield at the base, allowing White to more freedom to move forward. Bryce more freedom to move forward. I think it's wonderful. And that start, Sheffield United were chasing shadows, Jack. They had no answers to the defence. I think we were very compact, but we had a high-line compact unit. If you notice the first goal, I've only been able to see the match once, and these short highlights haven't shown me much. But I remember in the first goal, the build-up, which they've ticked Rice's assist off, which is annoying me. But the build-up to that, it was, I think, not only was Saliba involved, but Gabriel was involved. All of the defenders were up front on the left-hand side, and it just shows the high line. But it was so compact that, did you see, how many times did you see Sheffield United hit our half in the first half?
No, it was relentless. But other than that, got that chance that eventually got called offside, which was like the one-on-one with Rea, which he saved fantastically. I don't remember them laying a glove on us, to be honest. It was like a training session.
Exactly. Yeah. So unbelievable and an amazing start. And then after that first goal went in, I thought, you know, this is going to be a roller coaster. I thought even my 3-0 seems a bit meek now. But we had three chances before that. Saka's chance hit the bar with a follow-up Martin, and he couldn't quite get hold of. And then I think White put a probing ball across the net, the goal mouth, and Havertz just didn't get to it. That could have been a goal as well. Three chances before that, and all of this in the first 5 minutes. Unreal.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah, I mean, I remember, obviously, you know, at 20 minutes, I'm relaxed, which is incredible. And I'm at work, so I find it really. I mean, I'm teaching, and I've always got the game on in the background. That, you know, my kids know how I kind of work. They're always doing stuff in the classroom, but I always have it on in the background. And but rarely am I so chilled to the point where I can kind of take my eye off the game at 20 minutes. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm like, I'm really relaxed. But it was from the minute, I mean, in the first minute, Saka hits the bar, Martinelli should score from the rebound. They both probably should score. And you're like, wow, that's a powerful start, but kind of frustrated that he didn't finish that one. But then you see it's just wave after wave. It just keeps coming. And like you, I was a bit frustrated that Rice didn't get the assist because of the deflection. I think that's a really silly rule. That we saw that for Martinelli's one earlier. I think we were talking about offline. I think away at West Ham, we saw that, and that's just silly for me when it's a deflection that doesn't really deviate the ball much at all. But it's a great leave from Havertz, actually, for the Odegaard goal. I don't know if you, like, he does do really well to be, like, very aware that Odegaard's behind him, and that's brilliant. How in tune. I do really like the Havertz-Odegaard partnership. Like, I don't particularly think, you know, if you look at the data on them, they're like interchanging in passing a lot or anything like that, like a Saka Odegaard. But their ability to sort of mimic each other in terms of their work rate is really impressive to me. I really like how they feed off of each other, and you'll see one of them press and the other one's like, well, here we go. You know, and it's almost like it's like this telepathic communication between them, where they know exactly when to press, and they are absolutely relentless with it. Like, we wonder why Sheffield United can't get out of their own half. When they did get the ball, I mean, those two are just, they are hounding them. They are absolutely hounding them down before the next layer of Rice and Jorginho hits into them. And I think it allows Martinelli and Saka not to switch off in terms of the press, but it just allows them to, one of them can maybe take a breather for a second, because these two are doing so much off the ball work, I think.
They did it against Newcastle as well. Same thing.
And it's really impressive. And I think it has a really positive effect on our wingers, you know. And, you know, now you're watching, you know, before the break, you'd be watching Saka, and like, every time he gets the ball, there's three people on him. And now you're watching him, and it's one touch, and he's out, and he's beyond the whole defence. And you go, and it's happening every time in every game. And you go, well, Saka's on it. But there's more to it than that. I think it's the collective and the system that really is allowing Saka to shine once again. And once he, if you give Saka space, it's just, he's devastating, isn't he? I mean, you find out in this game, I mean, I thought he was devastating alongside Havertz and Odegaard and Martinelli in the first half, but you find out he's sick and he's come off after 45 minutes. I'm like, well, he's done his job, hasn't he? He's got his, he's got his assist. He's got, well, two assists in my eyes, but one's not given. And he's had a fantastic first half, but it's a great finish from Odegaard. Neil, just want a little touch on the numbers. I mean, James sent them over. I think he got one wrong.
That was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think Saka's actually got 8 assists. I just checked, but everyone is in double figures in terms of goals plus assists already. That includes Havertz at 7 and 3, Rice at 5 and 5. Getting goals from all over the pitch, but getting assists. I mean, Rice is the equivalent of a Thomas Partey last season, and he's already in double figures. You know, and I don't think Thomas Partey got close to that in terms of goals plus assists last season. We're getting goals all over, Neil, and that is what this Arsenal team is so. But we talk on and on about number 9. Thierry Henry talked about it last night on Sky, and he said, "I've never said that it's an absolutely an essential thing." He said, "What we need to do is put the ball in the net." He said, "Because we create plenty of chances," and that was the same last season. And this is the argument that I always make: we, the fan base, want a number 9, but we don't really know yet how much of a priority it is for Mikel Arteta. Because on the face of it, he could very well look at us and go, "Goals are absolutely not our issue," and he might look at something else. I'm sure he'll address things, but he may not see it as the absolute tunnel vision type priority that all the fan base do, might he?
No, absolutely. In fact, Henri was referencing Man City, that he feels that Arteta is trying to emulate him in that respect, because before Haaland, they had the same sort of system, didn't they? They didn't really have an out-and-out striker. And he says exactly that. He says, "Well, if you're scoring and you're finishing your chances, why do you need one? You don't." He says that he felt that the days of having one striker score 20 to 30 goals a season to win the league is over. He says it doesn't have to be like that anymore. If you've got 5, 6, or 7 getting the figures and getting the numbers, like we did very much last season, didn't we? We had, I don't know, 4 or 5 players in double figures, and we'd scored 88 goals. It's just a pity that our defence wasn't so great last season. So he alluded to that, and he also said that it doesn't necessarily mean as well on the other flip side of the coin that even if a striker does score 30 goals, that you're going to win the league as well. He said, so he says he doesn't feel it's a necessity. And I kind of, look, only a few games ago, I think all of us were saying we need a striker. I was saying it. I said, look, I think I've said it for a while, that I think we need a big, strong Drogba-like player, because if we had that, what a distraction it would be. But actually, I'm seeing it in Havertz. I think I said this before. I'm actually seeing he's not going to be scoring 25 goals a season. No. But he's doing a role similar to what Jesus used to do, in the sense that Jesus was a menace for the defenders. Just a real annoyance and a disturbance up there. But Havertz is doing it, I think, in a different way. And his strength is just ridiculous. His strength and the way he can shield the ball. I mean, I'm sorry to jump ahead, but I think it was our goal where Ben White scored. His presence in that box to firstly collect and control the ball, but then pass it on to, or lay it on to White. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. He's so good at that, and people are going to think that I've turned into a Havertz fanboy. It's not that. I'm just appreciating and seeing what he's doing. But I don't necessarily think we do need that striker at the moment. It's easy to say, isn't it? What if all of a sudden then something happens and all the goals dry up? Then we're going to say, oh, we need a striker. So at the moment, as it stands, no. But I don't know if he will address it in summer. We'll wait and see. But
I think the point with it, Neil, is one, those type of strikers, you know, the 25, 30 goals season strikers at the top level. I'm not talking about, you know, doing it, you know, even necessarily a mid-table club or in a league that maybe is not quite as challenging. I don't want to downplay, you know, the toughness of other leagues or anything. But those aren't, you know, if you look at the top level, you know, the elite level, there's a few of them around. You know, your Haalands, your Kanes, your Oshamans. You can count them on one hand, probably. So my point more is, not that I don't think he'll address it, will he make it the Rice type level of signing.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean? I think he will address it. I think he will, probably. Okay. Because you can tell, you know, Eddie's falling off. You know, there's obviously fitness issues with Jesus. I don't think any of us would be surprised for him to address it. But
my
point is more so, he may go one step further, but my point probably is more, how much of a financial and team-like priority does he make it? Is it a player that has to come in and drop into the team straight away, must start, takes up a huge proportion of our budget? I'm not certain, which is why, interestingly, in the last week since we last spoke, those links to strikers, specifically from like the likes of Ornstein, has come much more from the bracket of a younger, higher potential striker that's sort of budding and coming through, rather than the of established guy, right?
Gotcha.
Which I think would make a lot more sense with the way our squad is developing at the moment, you know, because you need Trossard in there, which really didn't feature much in this game at all, but he's definitely another alternative option, right? But I agree with you on Havertz, which we'll get to in a sec, because we're going to have to talk about his fourth goal, but which was fantastic. But he's just, definitely he's not going to be the guy that posts up double figures all the time and stuff like that. But he just so natural in the nine. I feel like every time I watch him, and I know we've set up with him at the nine, I feel relaxed about it. I think the players look really comfortable with it. I think he occupies defenders so well, and he has all of those attributes that the nine that you want to have, other than again the clinical attribute. But in terms of his positionally, he doesn't scour as much as Jesus, I think. And that works to a benefit of our wingers a lot, because he doesn't drop as deep. And when we're playing a double pivot like a Jorginho and a Rice, he doesn't need to drop as deep. You know, like in games like this, as much as I love Jesus, he'd be popping up all over the place, which is great. And it's great when we need it. But when your team is so system oriented and so smooth in the way it's moving, it's really not needed as much. And you're not seeing Havertz, you know, drop back too much into midfield. He maintains his position, I think, a little bit better than Gabriel Jesus. But either way, it's just that is creating such a good option for us centrally, which we didn't really recognise until Jesus was out for this period. We hadn't started Havertz at the number nine until the FA Cup game against Liverpool. So it's not like it's been going on for months and months or anything. But Neil Odegaard, fantastic for the goal. I think the only thing I got right about the game was that I think I maybe mentioned him as a scorer. He's now 6-6. What's really interesting, but then after that, Saka really is all about the second goal. I think they, interestingly, have played a back five all season, and Sheffield United went to a back four, putting Austin Trusty at left back, kind of trying to mimic Alcibiar sort of moment. You know, playing a centre back at left back, but he looked so uncomfortable there. And Saka, he looked square. He couldn't turn. Saka was getting in behind him every time, and he did it again for the second goal, which is an own goal in the end. But it's all Saka, really. And it's 2-0 at that point, and you're thinking, wow, this could be. I think that's where you text over, okay, let's get as many as we can here. And I'm like, wow, yeah, we really look like we're on it, you know. And at that point, it's completely one-way traffic. And then Martinelli with a third deal. The third is a slight deflection too, but it's a really nice move out to Martinelli. And it's Kvyat with another assist. I think that's three assists for Kvyat this season.
Unreal.
Which is a lot more than a lot of attacking midfielders in the league. I could definitely post up the numbers. But
I'm sure you will.
It's a no-look pass from Kvyat, Neil, as well. I just wonder what your 40 is. One goal, three assists in 15 games. So we say he's a more traditional type left-back.
Yeah,
it doesn't,
great.
It doesn't stop him getting in. He's very comfortable to go forward, Neil. And is that a sign of him becoming more comfortable in this role, is what I want to say? Because someone that isn't necessarily, they probably wouldn't feel they have the capability. He's got... He's fully capable going forward. He's not obviously Zinchenko in terms of his build-up play and all that kind of stuff, but he picks his moments and he really knows how to contribute to the attack as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think again, I alluded to it in the last pod. I said I think I find he's a bit of an amalgamation of of a traditional left back like Tierney, like we had, we've still got Tierney actually on the books, haven't we? So like Tierney and Zinchenko, I think I kind of said he's a bit of a mixture, but he's, I think the reason is, it's not just that he's comfortable, he's fearless. He's got the courage to do that without thinking I'm going to compromise my defensive duties. And I think that's a testament to the whole team's set up. And what's also important is his fellow teammates have confidence in him. So I think that's given him the allowing him to move forward, I feel, and not worrying about, I've got to hold back because if I get caught out defensively, I'm going to look, you know, I'm going to be exposed. Then people will talk about me the way that, you know, Zinchenko has been kind of mullered a little bit because of his weakness in the defensive role. So I think it's about fearlessness. I think he's got courage and he's 100%, he's comfortable. I think he looked comfortable literally from the start when this resurgence from him, or this introduction of him. And you said that this guy he's taken to the team really well. I mean, he looks good. You know, we've not seen much of him, but he does look good. And I think in the early days, Jack, you were saying, I think I'm going to see, he's going to be a player. He definitely is going to be a player. I think it just suits, his style just suits the team as it is at the moment. You know, of course, if we tinker with it a little bit, we might have to look at other options. But the fact that he's there when Tomiyasu has not been available, when Zinchenko has not been available, he's a godsend. It really is. And I think it's another masterclass signing. You know, it's one of the ones that's under the radar with everything else that's been going on, but a masterclass signing. But he was great, wasn't he? I mean, he's bombing forward and yeah, it's a great, great little one. Well, it was not like a 1-2, but it was a nice double role with Martin in there for that goal. And that's still a great goal. Really, really good goal it was. I think that epitomised what Martinelli was doing all game. He was so electric, wasn't he? We talked about Saka being electric on the right, but Martinelli was doing things on the left-hand side and he was so fast. I just love the aggression in us at the moment. We're not going to... It wasn't long ago, Jack, that we would be going to a stadium up that way and against a team like Sheffield United and we would be bullied. I feel that our team to players would be a little bit fearful. It just wouldn't work out this way. You know, we'd sometimes come unstuck against teams like this. But what have we shown lately, you know, even from last season, the Brentford's away, the Palace's away, even teams like Burnley, we're just destroying everyone in our path. It's a maturity in the team that I'm seeing, which is a big thing. And I think that's a lot. Arteta's got a lot to say for that. I think it's him. He's instilling this newfound bullishness in us. That we're just not letting teams get on top of us anymore, and I think a lot of that has got to do with him. I really do, and the culture that he's brought into the club. Kiwi is a fine example of that. He's very courageous. I don't know what else to say, but he's got the defensive and the attacking part of his game, you know, mixed up really well, I feel.
Yeah. What's really interesting is Tomiyasu and Zinchenko were very close for the last couple of games, according to Mikel Arteta. We don't know if that's true, but in terms of fitness, and I just wonder how his performances have allowed possibly us to just be a bit more sensible with the return of players that are clearly quite injury prone, pick up a lot of similar muscular injuries. And Kivior has come in, he's done a really good job to the point where people are arguing he may well be our first choice at this point. I mean, that's how good a job he's doing. And I don't think it's an unfair argument, because you can't just look at the individual. You have to look at how the collective's playing with the individual. This is the whole David Raya scenario again, where you go, hold on a minute, what is the overall effect on the system? And we're conceding a lot less chances, Neil. Not saying it's just Kivior, but he's in the team when it's happening. And you know, we're conceding a lot less mistakes back there as well. You know, a few weeks back, or when we were doing well, sort of October, November, the argument was always, we're doing well, we're winning games, but we always seem to make a big error at the back. You know, you remember that, those conversations we had. Mm. And touch wood, we've eradicated that.
Mm.
What's really interesting about the goals stuff is in this game, we had a 2 expected goals and we scored 6. And I think it's a fair point that some people make, is that we talk a lot when we miss chances and we're not clinical enough, but we don't talk that much about when we're overly clinical. And if you look at the data over the course of the season, there's a number out there that compares your actual goals scored versus the expected goals scored. And ours is a 0.061 plus 0.061. In comparison to Liverpool, theirs is a 0.025 and City's is a 0.011. So what it basically says is we are way more clinical than Liverpool and Manchester City across the season. And it's not close. And if you compare it to the whole league, because some teams create little chances and are still clinical, we're the most clinical team in the league. Newcastle second with 0.06. We're 0.061. In terms of positive. So we are quite by some distance out of the top three, the most clinical. And that is with Salah at Liverpool and Haaland at City. So our ability to actually finish the chances we get, as frustrated as we get sometimes with we're not taking our chances, is actually way better than those two teams.
Unbelievable.
Which is really impressive, isn't it?
Is that for the season today?
I don't know if it included yesterday's game. I don't see where the date is on it, but it's definitely for this current season, and I believe it's
crazy,
until the last round of games, which is really interesting, isn't it?
That's crazy if you think about the first half, you know, before Christmas, although we were top, we weren't scoring prolifically, if you think about it. All right, I know what you mean. It's not about how many goals you score, it's about the chance. But still,
yeah,
I felt that we were missing loads of chances and we weren't creating as much. I get it, but I don't know, that's surprising anyway.
The one thing I would say is that if you just looked at expected goals data rather than expected goals versus actual goals scored, City and Liverpool are slightly ahead of us, meaning they are expected to score per game over two and we're expected to score just slightly under two. So what it does say there is they are, you know, the amount of chance they probably create more chances total. But in terms of taking the chances, we're actually way ahead.
Which
is I found that number quite interesting. I saw it crop up on Twitter the other day, and I was like, let me look at that and evaluate what that's actually saying. I was like, that's actually saying we're way more clinical than they are. And that's not what the narrative is. The narrative is we get is quite the opposite from that, which is quite interesting. Good to see Martinelli get on the score sheet. I'm literally going off James's numbers right here, but that's 6-4 for him in a season where we feel, you know, he's maybe not got, I think he was 15 goals last season in the Premier League. But it's not, I've never really been hugely concerned with his lack of numbers this season. I think he's been playing really well, especially since the turn of the year as well. Looked fantastic, picked up a cut to his foot, and I think that's the best we could hope for with the way he's being limped off. You know, when you see him two person, hold on a minute, did he roll it? We're all texting going, I didn't see it. But if it's a cut on his foot, the worst case scenario there is he needs stitches. That means maybe he misses the weekend. But in terms of longevity-wise, that shouldn't really be a problem, I don't think. Hopefully, touch wood, you know. Then that's really good. And the Saka one, obviously, was a sickness thing, so that should be short-term as well. The fourth goal, Neil, from my memory, and I'm watching it back, was a really lovely footballing move. And again, it's Saka. But I really love the way Saka sort of, in such a hectic box where they're really congested, is able to pick the right pass out. And we talked last week, Neil, about Jorginho only really starting big games. I think I gave you a stat that he's only started six games in the league this season. And
that's right.
I guess my expectancy upon that was I would not have been surprised for Jorginho not to have played against Sheffield United at all, and for Havertz to play in the eight and maybe Trossard come into the nine or something like
that.
Yes. He didn't do it. And I just wondered what your thoughts are on that and what it clearly does in games like this, Neil, where he may have felt Jorginho is a... unnecessary in games of this where we're going to dominate the ball so much. I think we had somewhere around 81% possession for this game. But is it a sign that even in games like this, it gives the license to the likes of Rice to really get in the box and be creative and try to get on the end of things. And that's Declan Rice with also double figures for goals and assists.
Yeah,
he posted it himself, so he's obviously keeping an eye on the numbers himself.
Brilliant.
You know, sometimes you think the players don't recognise that, especially the players that aren't known for it. But all his post was double figures. That's all he said. And I thought that was quite interesting. But what were your thoughts on the goal, but also the fact that we sort of kept Jorginho in for this game, especially with, you know, the likes of Partey coming back and stuff like that?
I was thrilled to see that he kept Jorginho in. I think he's another exceptional player. I really feel that he's added to what is ticking with the team at the moment. They all have all of them. You mentioned you brought up Kiwi earlier, talks about Havertz, and Jorginho is not to be excluded in this. I think he's absolutely great at the base. And while he might not be the quickest, and he may not be able to, I don't know, he hasn't got the pace that the others may have, or the strength in that. He's a strong guy, but you know what I mean? Not in the sense of a one-to-one all the time, like maybe Havertz can and maybe Rice can. What he does add is he's so intelligent, Jack, and he's got great vision, but he's so fast. He can see a pass and allow that progression to just keep on naturally flowing. It's just great. So while he's there at the base protecting the defenders, he's also very progressive and he's very forward-thinking. And that is what I like about him. But I think he's a very, very clever player. And I think because of him, you're right, it's allowing Rice to move forward. And I don't know if you noticed, if you look at that goal again, there's one thing I noticed is the way Rice is off the ball movement. The way he's moving, weaving kind of up and down and all over the place in the penalty box is just fantastic. He's so hungry. He wanted to score and he wanted to be the one that would collect the pass from Saka. And that's exactly what happened. He was just weaving in and out, anticipating where Saka might, you know, draw the ball back or draw the ball to. And that's exactly what happened. It was a great goal. And this is what and I'm thinking that if Jorginho wasn't in the side, would he had the enterprise and the freedom to be able to do that? So I think it's great because we know that Rice is happy. Rice is the kind of player, to me anyway, he'll be happy to play in any position. He's that kind of player. But I think his preference has always been, he's always played at the six or the eight role. But I think more at the six, wasn't he, for West Ham? He had to be, didn't he? Because West Ham weren't a team that they would be defending a lot in matches. So I feel that this is a kind of a new environment for him, but he's excelling in it. He really is doing well. He's taken it with aplomb. It's great that we've got one player that can do two jobs if need be. At the moment, thankfully, we don't need it because we've got Jorginho there. But I think it's great that he's got that flexibility. And I think I don't want to see the team change, Jack, and not one bit. If you ask me, what do you think for Brentford? I'd still keep it the same. Maybe Martinelli may not play, but we've got options again. We can bring in Jesus, we can bring in Trossard, options.
The interesting thing there is obviously you got the Porto game a couple of days, 3 days after it. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, in terms of Jorginho, the argument with Jorginho has been, you know, do you play him twice a week physically? Is he going to do that? And that'll be quite interesting whether he continues that Saturday, or maybe he keeps the same system and brings Partey in. We don't know. I mean, I think it would be a big call. He looked a little bit rusty for sure.
To me, he did.
Yeah. Sorry, I got the numbers wrong. Rice's goal was beautiful, but it was the fifth goal. We'll go back to the Havertz one in a second.
Okay, yeah, of course.
But, you know what's really interesting, and I do have to bring it up at some point when we talk about Thomas Partey, is I just did a little comparison matrix just before I got online and talked to you, and I was really curious to analyse Jorginho's stats this season versus Thomas Partey's last season. And it's really interesting how many of those stats Jorginho is superior in. And I find it really quite interesting because Thomas Partey last season, to me, was unplayable.
He was, to be honest, right, and
it's very, very interesting. I mean, Mikel Arteta has been talking up Thomas Partey a lot this week about how much we've missed him and what he offers in terms of central midfield. But I think it's also important to remember that even at the start of the season when Thomas Partey was fit, he wasn't actually playing in central midfield. He was playing at right back and an inverted role. And I'm still very curious to see how much and where and how we use Thomas Partey if he is fit for the remainder of the season. But I think you're absolutely spot on Rice, because as much as the fee never gets mentioned anymore, which is a testament to how good he has been, one of the biggest factors in that fee being so fair at this point and you know, us feeling like we've got huge value, is the fact that he can play in both roles. Because even if you look at a Rodri, you can't play him in the six and then play him in the eight. It doesn't happen. He plays at the base, he plays at the base, he plays at the base. But you can literally just switch up Rice. And me and James talk about this a lot in terms of transfer discussion. And we talked a lot in the summer about, well, we need a 6'8". And we never really at that moment regarded Rice as being the 6'8". We felt he'd come in, he'd play in one position for a while. Maybe we'd use him in the other if we necessarily needed him. But he literally is the epitome of a 6'8 in an Arteta system. I mean, you can literally flip him in game if you need to.
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
And I think he's still the best 8 we've had all season. You know, in terms of our options, I know we've had Smith Rowe there and Havertz there. I think Rice has been the best 8, and he's been probably our best 6 for a large part of the season as well. But I do think Jorginho has huge value there in terms of his ability to progress the ball and his comfort on the ball. And positionally, I think Jorginho is so understanding of that 6 position. It works so well. And I've loved the relationship Rice and him have as well. Rice almost looks up to him as well, which is really impressive. You know, I'm all about the stats today. Goals scored in the Invincible season. How many goals did we score?
I cannot remember. I know at the moment we're ahead by about 5 or 6.
Right, so in the whole season, we scored 73.
Wow. We
scored 68 so far this season. Now, the amazing thing about that season, because I don't want to downplay how good the Invincibles were, me and you both remember that season fully. We only conceded 26 that season. So, you know, that is a very impressive defensive record. We've conceded 23 already this season, but of course, we are still the best defence in the league. Just going back, because I've got the numbers mixed up, this is what happens when you score too many goals. Neil, you don't even
know which one's which. Stop it, Arsenal, stop it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame me for that. Anyone that's listening, if you think this is sort of unprofessional of us to flip flat, it's rare that teams score 6 on a week-to-week basis. You know, I mean, I literally am losing count of the numbers. But the Havertz one was really interesting because it was a foul on Martinelli before it. But is that a sign, Neil, of... I mean, I guess I'll say it. Does Havertz even take that shot on 2 months ago? Does he even take the shot on? And the one thing I would say for him, I've always felt his shots have been kind of lacking in power and you know, the ability to be clinical. But that's a striker's finish all day. But it's probably a real sign of how confident he is, isn't it, at the moment? He looks like he's at the most confident part, at the very least, of his Arsenal career, but I'd probably argue his Premier League career at this point.
You wouldn't be able to tell from his face, because his face hasn't changed. He doesn't. He's not very animated, is he, with anything really? But yeah, his confidence is sky high. I think he's so happy. He's so happy at the moment. He knows now that he is part of this team. I don't think he knew what he was, and not down. It's not his fault. I think we were all saying it, as much as criticism as Havertz was getting, we were all saying it's not the player's fault. It's just that he's just not fitting into the system at all. And Arteta probably didn't know. Arteta knew that there was something. He got him for a reason. Edu and Arteta got him for a reason. But it just wasn't quite working out at the beginning of the season. Now we know exactly what that reason was. He's a tremendous Jack. That is an Henri-esque goal. It really is. I know it's people saying, what are you comparing him to, Henri? What are you talking about? Not to him. Not comparing. I'm saying the style of the goal. Just smashed it straight into the corner. No, goalkeeper, no chance. But I've got to give it to Martinelli. He was blooming fouled. I don't care what anyone says. He was fouled. He was literally on the floor, but he still had the ability just to pass the ball away, you know, into Havertz's path so that Havertz could do that. But it's just great that Havertz had the awareness to anticipate that as well. Again, he's. I think Havertz has got great awareness. I talk about that about Jorginho and, of course, Odegaard. It's you know, we all know what Odegaard's got. But I think Havertz has got it as well, and he just knew to carry on the run. And I thought that was an amazing finish. I was so pleased for him. And he's getting the numbers as well. He's you know, isn't that two or three games in a row that he's got an assist and a goal? Again, I'm getting the numbers now.
Yeah, exactly, because we're getting so many from all the right areas.
But he scored in the last four, I think, Jack. He scored in the last four.
Yeah, he might well have done. He might well have done.
I think he has. So I think he's showing consistency now as well in terms of even scoring.
Yeah.
See, that's one thing. So that there is, when I talk about him and Jesus and trying to compare the two, as good as Jesus is at doing what he does, he wasn't always putting the ball in the net. Mm. But Havertz is starting to do that. He's had a bit of a run. And again, look, I'm not trying to dismiss Jesus for a second. I think he's I love him and I think he's a tremendous player. I just don't think it's time to bring him back in, not at the expense of someone like Havertz, because like you just said, he's confident now, he's happy, and he's not scared to go and have a go at the goal as well. I would not change him for a second. Sorry. There's no way.
You know what else is, I think another thing that maybe I don't think we've overlooked it, but he had 93% pass accuracy in this game, and that's a lot higher than what he was having from midfield, you know, which is impressive, because it's harder in a way up there, because he's been surrounded by players, but his way he pops off the ball and he posts up and he creates a pivot. I have to say, I really like him. I feel a sense of, I don't know if it's comfort, but like a sense of belief that he's really going to trouble no matter what defence it is. He's really going to provide him a lot of trouble, and he's able to go short, he's able to go long, he's able to win aerially, he's just able to answer so many questions for us from that position. Like you said, I mean, he's got same amount of goals as Xhaka now from last season, which I know now he's going into the nine position, so those stats are becoming less comparable,
but,
you know, I mean, you know, he's on set. He's on the way to going into double figures for Premier League goals, and that is, you know, if you said that earlier in the season,
you wouldn't
have believed it. So it's really impressive how he's looked to turn a year. He's maybe been the most improved since the turn of the year, from my perspective. I'm sure John would argue against it, but I think it's really true. And, you know, it has coincided with him playing at the nine. So I don't think it's a lazy way of thinking to say that, you know, that those two things have kind of meshed well together.
No, it's 100%, Jack. It's 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And but at that point, Neil, I mean, 4-0, obviously the fifth goal we've already talked about because we've flipped them, but even at 3-0, I think it's kind of incredible, isn't it? It's like the 16th minute or something, and the Sheffield United fans are leaving in their droves. I mean, they are leaving in their droves. I mean, I can't remember ever seeing that. I don't think I can remember ever seeing it.
Three away games in a row, I think fans are leaving.
Yeah, but even at West Ham, it was like half time. This is like they haven't even finished their first beer. You know, it's quite incredible.
And I think also we are the fastest. I don't know if it's in top flight football history, but Prem history, we have scored the most goals in the least amount of time. So I think we scored the fifth at 39 minutes, was it? I can't remember. Again, I'm not sure. But I know that we've got the most goals in the quickest time in the Premiership, at least the Premiership history.
Wow. So we scored the six. That would have been the first time, wouldn't it? In the first half, if we scored the six, it would have been the first ever time.
Yeah, that was my only disappointment. I was just getting greedy. I put a silly kind of comical tweet out saying that why am I sitting here upset that we haven't got more goals? But, you know, it was a bit of tongue-in-cheek. But, you know, can you imagine if we'd got seven or eight? Because I think seven would have equaled our all-time seven. Who did we score seven against? I'm sure it might not have been
it's weird because when we beat West Ham, wasn't there a stat that said that was our best sort of away performance of all time?
Yes, six, yeah, that's right. So six is the best, and we've done it twice in about 2 weeks now.
Yeah, which is incredible.
Crazy. I think seven is our all time. Oh, I don't know. I might be getting confused, but I knew there was something special about hitting seven. And then if we'd got, we could have got eight or nine in that game, Jack, easily. Again. You know, that was my only disappointment. And then, sadly, Saka missed out, didn't he? We missed out on the other record of every half, I think it was. Mm-hmm. If we had scored a second one in the second half, that would be nine consecutive halves that we scored at least two goals. And then, of course, wasn't Saka on some kind of record as well where he scored two in last five games and he missed out this one or something stupid anyway. I don't
know. Of course, well, no, he had the He had the record before this of equaling Ian Wright's and Jerome's five in a row or whatever it was. So So I guess the slight, if he'd stayed on, I'm sure he would have got that.
Definitely would have got it. I think if he'd stayed on, Jack, and because I don't think Arteta would have taken him off straight away, even whether he was sick or not. I think he would have stayed on at least till 60 or 70 minutes. And I think if he'd stayed on, I'm pretty sure, it's hard to say hypothetically, but I'm convinced that we would have got another one or two. Mm. More than we did, but it doesn't work. I think I'm just being greedy. I'm being greedy now. That's probably more than I want the way.
There you go. Exactly. I mean, I get you because you're seeing the other teams. It's relentless at the top, and you're trying to get every advantage you can. And sometimes games like this, you really want to. I think we did. We took advantage of what was in front of us. You can never complain with results like this. But when you're seeing teams, win week after week after week, and you're trying to see how you can improve upon yourself. We've done it in a way. I mean, arguably it's a fourth point if you win games like this because of the goal difference and things like that. If things are so close in the end, you have that in your back pocket. Who knows if it will be that close? We're still a long way away from that, but
it could be, couldn't it?
Like you say, it could well be, and you don't want to, you'd be gut-wrenching to lose it in that fashion. So, other leagues have, I didn't realise this, but Italy don't even go by goal difference. They go by head-to-heads. Traditionally, we always go by goal difference. And I don't know what our goal difference... our goal difference when we were going back to the Invincible season, but our goal difference in the Invincible season was around a plus 47 or something like that, and we're currently at plus 45 for goal difference. And you don't know which way it goes, but that, I remember seeing that at the end of this game and thinking that's a lot, isn't it? Plus 45 goal difference, that's a lot. So I thought I'd have a look through previous seasons just to see where it's at, and it's impressive. It's really impressive. What's really impressive, Neil, is when you've won games like this, what I've been really impressed with is we make all the changes, but how we're collectively so applied to not wanting to concede, let alone goals, just chances.
Just about to bring
you know
up.
What I mean? And I think that's so hard for a team that knows they've won the game to be so switched on that they don't even want to concede a chance, let alone a goal. And, I think they had a couple of shots in the second half from 30 yards or whatever, but we really didn't concede a chance and it was still very much one-way traffic. And that is impressive, Neil, because obviously we've got way bigger games and bigger tests to come, but that's really impressive in terms of the standards that are being set. I think that's really, really impressive to show those standards. You saw it at West Ham away when we conceded one chance in the second half, but they were so happy that they kept that ball out. And I find it really impressive because it's easy. Even we as fans are so invested, you can switch off at 5-0. We kind of looking up stuff. So it's really impressive that they collectively they stay on it. And if they continue to do that this season, Neil, we've got every chance, I think.
No, I was just you bring it up. I was just about to say that I was feeling greedy, and why haven't we got more goals? Forward thinking, they're still forward thinking. They're like 5-6 nil up, and they're still forward thinking. It's not like then they sit back and defend and think we don't want to risk any injuries or anything. They're still going at it, and also, as you said, they get upset if they even allow a shot on target, let alone concede. Which game was it where I can't remember when it was, Jack? You can remind me. We'd won the game convincingly, and then Gabriel did a great tackle to stop them having a chance of a goal, and then he kind of fist pumped the air. But I mean, this was like in the last minute of the game, and yet he was still at it.
It might have been West Ham. I can't remember.
It might have been West Ham. But it was quite recently. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And that epitomised everything about what you had just said. That how they are still so. You know what? It's really funny. I look at the BBC report. Now you have the player ratings, and as good as we've been, Raya's always down near the bottom at 6 points. But you know what? It's not because he's been rubbish. It's because we've not allowed the other team to make him do anything. He's almost literally become a spectator. That's a bit harsh on him. He hasn't. Of course he hasn't. But you know what I mean? It's like He's not having to do much. But when he does get called into action, he's still very authoritative, I feel. I think, you know, there's a couple of moments, even yesterday, I think he was called into action, and he's just full of confidence. And that's helping the defence, because they have now, I think, made the adjustment from Ramsdale to Raya. I'm not quite sure it was there at the start when Raya was first introduced to the team. There was rumblings and talk that, you know, some of the players were unhappy with how Ramsdale had been treated. It could be because, you know, end of the day, they might all become friends. You know, you become a team, you're playing, you're literally training every day of the week. You spend a lot of time with each other, and that could well be true. But I think now, if there was anything of that, it looks like that's dissipated. And that's not with me trying to poo-poo Ramsdale at all. You know how much I love him. It's not like that. But end of the day, I still want what's best for the team. And I think Raya is really now settled in as well. So I think that's another big factor. But I just feel that the defence, that they're so eager not to concede. It's almost become a mission, isn't it? That we cannot concede. As we've always said, for defenders to not concede a goal, it's as good as a striker scoring a goal for me. That's their role. So I think it's amazing to see that even if we're 20-0 up, and if that's the attitude, if that's how they're going to apply themselves, that can only be good for us. I at the moment, I don't see anything. I don't see many weaknesses in this team. Do you, Jack? I really don't. The only thing that I would maybe fear now, if there is anything to fear, it's complacency, that we don't become too complacent.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah, and if we have the squad, I definitely think we have more of a squad than last season. It was very interesting, I thought, to see how and who he brought on substitute-wise. You mentioned Ramsdale there. Obviously, Ramsdale's coming back in for the weekend. So he will be playing at the weekend against Brentford, because obviously...
Jack, you've got to mention the sixth goal.
It's a lovely finish. Well, what was interesting about the sixth goal, obviously, it's Havertz again that brings it down and lays it off to Ben White. But Ben White didn't even see it, apparently, because he kind of flipped when he shot it. But it's a great finish, isn't it? It was
unbelievable.
Great finish. He can turn up with a goal. So if he scored one against Leeds last season when I was there against the bar, he turned up with a few. Can't he, Ben White? Like you said, he's a bit of an unsung hero in a way, but he's looked fresher. If I was to say anything about Ben White, he looks fresher. He looks like this new sort of fullback adjustment for him as well has been of benefit, where he doesn't have to always be going beyond Saka, and he can invert a little bit more and drop in when he needs to. Obviously, a little bit less so with Jorginho, but his role's a bit more defined. But brilliant finish, Neil. Might have been the pick of all the finishes alongside him.
Yeah, so... Did you see his interview? He's in his interview on the Arsenal website. Please watch it if you haven't seen it.
I haven't. He's
hilarious. He's so hilarious. It's like he talks as if he just doesn't want to be there. It's just so funny. And his answers are so short, complete opposite of me. I never stops talking. He'll talk you'd expect a longer answer, and he just goes, yeah. He's got that real low, I don't care attitude tone about him. He's fascinating to watch, although it's so short and sweet. I love, he makes me laugh. He really does. But he was, that was a great finish. I'm sorry, but I really have to, again, a lot of credit has to go to Havertz. That was great strength and control of the ball. It's a really good layoff. It really is. Because he had the defender on him as well, I think. Oh, just so sweet. And I'm so pleased that we've got so many different scorers in every game as well. Many different scorers. It's unbelievable. I mean, if you include the own goal, that's five different scorers before 39 minutes in a game. I mean, who does that? Crazy. It's just crazy. And I'm sorry, I did miss the point about, the people that we brought on. I think it's good to give the players like Jesus and Partey and even Vieira. So, you know, I didn't see that coming, by the way. I did not see Vieira coming on, but fair play. I think Vieira looked all right, actually. I think, to be honest, out of the three, I think he looked the most hungry to me. He looked really hungry. Mm-hmm. There was one move where I think he just overhit the pass to who was collecting the ball? Jesus. But it would have been a great move. And I think what I'm trying to say is, you're right. Even though we made the changes, it didn't stop us trying to still do the same thing. That's what I liked about it. And I think Partey just looked a bit rusty, and you can't blame him. He hasn't been playing since October, I think it is. Jesus, you'd maybe expect a little bit more, because he has featured kind of more recently. But I think they're great options, but I wouldn't change the first team, but they're great options, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus had a lot of touches came in. He had a couple of chances as well, which he maybe could have done a little bit better with. Maybe took the extra touch. He had one, which was actually a great save by the keeper that he tried to put wide, and the keeper kind of came around with his top hand.
That's it. That's the one.
Which was a lovely move. He looked frustrated coming off Jesus. Hopefully that's not an indication of what he's feeling in his knee. There were some rumours of that after that he maybe was feeling in his knee. I do think he's going to have to be managed. I know Arteta came out this week and said it was a new knee injury from a knock, etc. I don't necessarily find that easy to believe, but I also don't think it's as minor as what they're making out. I think he will have to be one that will be managed. So how many games he will start from now until the end of the season, I don't know, but it'd be fantastic to have him in and around the squad and starting when he can and things like that, because I do think he's really valuable to the team.
100%.
We've seen some different things with Havertz and some positive things with Havertz. Jesus definitely is really capable. But did you find it interesting that Smith Rowe didn't get any minutes, Neil? I just wonder. I mean, these are minutes that we would call, I guess excess minutes or not meaningful minutes anyway. But I did find it interesting that Jesus, Partey, Vieira suddenly fit. Suddenly, you know, Smith Rowe is slightly down the pecking order again. It's not great signs for him, is it?
No, it's not. It's again, it's heartbreaking for me. But if I don't know, I feel for him as an individual, and I think that if this is going to be the way it's going to be, maybe a move away is the best thing for him. And it breaks my heart to say that. I love the guy so much, and I still feel he's got bags of talent to showcase, and he's not getting the chance to do so. But end of the day, end of the day, the team's working so well as it is. It's not the right time to bring him on, and that's I'm conflicted. I don't know how to say it, Jack. I'm conflicted. I want to see him succeed at this club, but when is he going to get the chance? If he's got players in front of him that are doing the business, it's a hard one, isn't it? It really is tough. It is quite telling that he didn't get a chance. I mean, you'd think that yesterday he'd come on, 100% he'd come on. It was 6-0 up, surely. And that's why I was quite surprised to see Vieira. I didn't see Vieira coming on, and I was quite surprised. So I don't know what that is indicator. Is that an indication that, you know, Arteta wants to bring him back into the fold and get him playing more? But Smith Rowe is still sitting there smiling on the bench. He seems to be happy, and he said, didn't he? He says, "I will not go until the club gets rid of me." And I really like that about him. He truly loves the club. He's obviously an Arsenal fan. He's in there since a kid. But you know, he's not one of these players that, you know, that are passionate about the club and love the club. He's got the talent to back it up. He really has. But he's not getting the chance. I don't know what the future holds. It looks like if he keeps him in the summer, then he's got intentions for him to stay, fair enough. But, you know, we've seen it with Nelson. He got a 4-year contract, and you're like scratching your head. Why did he get a 4-year contract? How many minutes has he played this season? I don't know. I don't know what to say on that one, Jack, but I'm heartbroken. Because I think he could be on his way out.
I mean, it might be a sign as well. I mean, Vieira is more of a natural replacement to Bukayo Saka in terms of his left-footedness and stuff like that. So, you know, that might be part of it. But then you've got four changes after it, haven't you? So you got the Trossards and the Cedrics coming on before him and stuff like that. Which I know is to give certain players rest. You know, the fullbacks obviously were a little light on. It makes sense. I think a lot of people complain about the substitute. I'm not complaining about any of them really. It made sense. It was good to get 30 minutes in Jesus and Thomas Partey's legs, wasn't it? And like you said, I thought they, you know, Partey particularly maybe looked a little bit rusty, but you don't know what value that those minutes can have to you know, the next games coming up, you know, because we're going to need him. We've got two games in quick succession. I know then we've got a bit of a break, but it would be really nice in these next two games. I don't know if it's possible because they're going to be intense, but to feel like they're fully fit again. I don't know if that's going to be true because on Partey's been out for so long, but on Jesus, it seems like we're still managing his injury, right? It doesn't feel like he's fully fledged back yet. It doesn't, not to me anyway. So let's see where we are with that. But yeah, ultimately, really professional performance. I think I just want to, I guess I do want to touch a little bit, really briefly, because I think people argued whether Havertz or Odegaard should, and you could have given the man a match to multiple players, but Odegaard, I think he is playing at a level that is closest thing that I've seen to sort of, I know he plays in a deeper role than closest thing I've seen to Dennis Bergkamp in terms of his effect he has technically on the team. I think I think he's technically the best footballer in the league, actually. I thought this last season, and obviously De Bruyne did his thing and it got all the plaudits, and rightly so, because, you know, of what they did and what he won. But when you watch Odegaard and his comfort level on the ball and his ability to manipulate the ball and shift it from side to side and go for, I do think we're really quite blessed with the player that we've got here. And I think it's really rare that Real Madrid make a mistake in selling someone. But I think they've made a huge mistake in selling Martin Odegaard. I really do. I think they made a huge mistake in selling him. I said it when we loaned him. I said, I couldn't believe that we'd loaned him. I was like, we were so bad when we loaned him. I was like, this is amazing. We've a loaned player that I've been watching for so long, and he's such a good player. And he didn't really get a lot of plaudits when we loaned him. You know, we didn't move a lot in league position. We got knocked out of the Europa League. But I can't tell you, I was so impressed by him during the loan. And I thought he was just my favourite player ever since he come in.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
And I saw a kid today in my kid's school, and he had an Arsenal shirt on. You don't see it that often over here. See a ton of Arsenal shirts, but not in young kids. See him a lot more in adults, actually, which is kind of crazy over here. And he's got Odegaard across the back of his shirt. And then I saw another kid earlier in the week with Odegaard walking across my school with Odegaard across the back of his shirt. And I just thought,
it's having an impact.
Yeah. And I said, I just thought I'd say, because in England you see that all the time, but here it's a little. And I was like, you know, you've got on the back. They really knew a lot about him. They were like, he's my favourite player. You know, I really like him. And I was like, really? And we just chatted. And I was like, oh, that's really good. And I was like, really? And I just think he's having the obviously, that's not really valuable in itself. But I'm so impressed by the player. I'm really impressed by how he holds himself, how he speaks, how he represents the club. But beyond that,
yeah. Yeah,
I think you know, there's a lot of arguments, you know, type of captains and all that kind of stuff. But I really do think he's like really representative of what the club is in terms of his work rate. I mean, you just don't see creative players that often that have that kind of work rate. Like, you just don't. Even the likes of like De Bruyne and people like that, they're often given like this sort of free role where they don't. But Odegaard is our hardest worker probably. And that is so impressive when you've got a player that's that technically gifted, I think. I mean, it's simple to say, but it's really hard to do week in, week out. So I just think he deserves a little bit more, maybe tiny, you know, 1% more praise, maybe today at least than everyone else. Cause I do think he's playing at a level that is maybe the best of his career at the moment. And if he can continue to do it, cause he had a little bit of a steady start like Saka, that could be massive for us, cause he really makes us tick, doesn't he, in the final third.
Yeah, you've summed it up. I don't need to add any more. I think he's just, when you talk about how hard he works, he runs so much during games. I think he's up there in the top this season. It was anyway, a few couple of weeks ago anyway. I think only Trossard was in there as well amongst that. But the top four, you know, greatest distances covered, it was him. Three of them were him, and then one was Trossard or something like that anyway. I may have got it wrong, but it just shows. And what I also like, just to add, which I don't need to repeat what you just said. I think that is exactly the great description. How you've just described him is exactly what he is. But what I liked is, if you, I mean, obviously, I don't know if you get the Sky coverage, but what tended to happen, whichever platform was showing it, I think because of the magnitude of Rice's signing, it would be him doing most of the post-match interviews. Which is right. He talks well as well, and he's a great advocate. He's a great ambassador almost now for the club, I feel. But yesterday it was Odegaard and Thierry Henry and that idiot Spitboy, and you know, whoever the other guy was asking him questions, and he was speaking so well, Jack. He really was, the way he came across, and for me, it really hit home that actually, as much as I wouldn't mind Rice being the captain of this club, I also feel that Odegaard has earned the right to be captain as well. Because what Odegaard does is he leads. He said it himself, he goes, I lead by example. I just lead by example. I lead with what my feet do on the pitch, which is, I think, absolutely right. He isn't the traditional captain that I always wanted, you know, the mad shouting and barking and orders and be very regimented in that way. I think he just leads by example. And I think he spoke so well yesterday. I was utterly impressed. And I can see why he's been one of your favourite players for quite a few years now. You were wax lyrical about him as soon as we got him, I remember. And we hadn't even signed him at that point. You were so happy. And you were like that. The pods are evidence. If anyone looks back on the pods, you can hear you talking about him. So, no, I completely agree with you. I'm in total agreement with that. And I think we are blessed. We are blessed to have him in our team because he's like a conductor of a lot of what goes on, especially progressively. He really is. He's a conductor and he always looks, you were talking about, who did you say looks really cool and calm? Was it Kiwi early in the pod? I think he is as well. He's very cool and calm. Nothing seems to faze him, does it? And he doesn't ever panic. And I just think, you know, people used to say that he doesn't turn up in the big games. I think that's nonsense. It's nonsense. What do you mean he doesn't turn up in the big games? I mean, we came second last season and we're challenging again this season. Where does that come from? I'm sorry, he's a tremendous player. I don't need to say anything more. Just quickly, I just want to correct myself. Just before the previous question, I wasn't trying to say that I wanted Smith Rowe to come on as substitute in place of Vieira because they're different positions. I said I was just surprised that Vieira got on and Smith Rowe didn't. That was the only thing. And I just worry about the kid. That was all it was.
Yeah, we'll be interested. I mean, I'm not convinced he necessarily trusts Vieira loads more, but I just find it interesting. Is it a sign maybe of the hierarchy? Well, next few weeks will tell, I guess. Maybe. But I think both of them have a lot to prove in Arteta's eyes, probably. I'm not sure either of them are hugely trusted at this point. And it'd be great to find one of them to be for the last stage of the season because you just don't know if you're going to need them. But Neil, fantastic performance, 6-0. You could have given the man of the match to anybody, really. Odegaard, Havertz, most seem to give it to. I think Odegaard edges it just for me because of his impact on the whole collective.
Yeah, but great.
You could definitely make that argument about Havertz too. Hopefully Martinelli's okay. Hopefully Saka's okay. And hopefully maybe we have Tomiyasu or Zinchenko back for the Brentford game at 5:30 on Saturday. Neil, what's your prediction for that? Brentford, obviously, going for a little bit of a trigger period, but we've had some really difficult games against Brentford. Home game last season obviously stands out. What's your prediction? Arsenal versus Brentford at home on Saturday, Neil?
Role reversal for me. Before I'd always say 4-5-0s and we'd win. We wouldn't. Now we're winning 4-5-6-0s. I'm going to be prudent. It's pretty weird, isn't it? How the mind works. No, Brentford's a tough game. Oh, we had that controversial 1-1, didn't we? Last season.
Of course.
I mean, that was not a goal. Anyway, let's not get angry. This is a good moment for us now. So I'm going to go again with 3-0. So I'll say 3-0 again. I trust in our defence. I don't think we'll concede. And I will go 3-0. And I will say, you pick one out of the hat, man. They're all scoring. I'll have a joke and say Ray. No, I'm only joking. Do you know what? I'll say Gabriel. I'll go Gabriel. 3-0. Gabriel.
Okay. I like it. I'll go... Yeah, I think it'll be a tough game. I mean, Brentford, their underlying metrics are actually pretty good, Brentford, but they just they've struggled in you know both boxes a little bit this season. But I'll go 3-1. I'll say 3-1, and I'll go Odegaard again.
Nice.
Why not? Nice. But yeah, hopefully, it'd be nice to see one of our fullbacks come back because, like we said, we got Porto coming up after that.
Yeah, true.
You know, you don't know what you're going to need for that type of game. So having options would be really, really helpful. I do think we'll see possibly Zinchenko or Tomiyasu, one of them back, because he said they're close for a while now. And I get the feeling one of them will roll back in. But again, like you said, whereas before, when they rolled back in, they rolled straight back into the team. That just may not be the case this time. And that's really handy to be able to give them the extra week or whatever it is. Because whilst March is looking pretty... quiet in terms of fixtures, though all the fixtures are really massive in March. April looks absolutely shocker, doesn't it? So, we were going to need the squad, put it that way. You know, we're going to need the squad. So, getting.
Do you think that break will help us? Because we've got a longer break than us.
It's hard to say, Neil, because I don't want to. Obviously, it's after Porto and you don't know, lots of things can happen. So, you know, want to beat Brentford and then look at Porto and can we turn that tie around? And that may have an effect on things as well, you know, how you go into the international break. And a lot of people talked about us having 3 weeks off. I think what people don't mention much of is everyone's having 2 weeks off.
That's
because
right.
it's an international break. So we finish on the Tuesday, everyone else finishes on the Saturday or Sunday. And obviously we don't have that game because of Chelsea games getting moved. So I don't necessarily think that time frame is significant. You know, us having an extra 4 or 5 days as opposed to other teams having just 2 weeks. I don't want to get there yet, but what I'd like to see us do is because obviously it's a massive game coming back after that, is pull absolutely everyone we can out of the international breaks. But we typically aren't the team to do that. And if we do it, we seem to be scrutinized much more than the other teams doing it.
Of course. So
that's the frustrating thing. So it's really hard to say, Neil. You know, it doesn't feel like, at the moment, you want momentum to stop, does it? But
no.
when it comes to international breaks, it's the same for everybody. So it's not, you know, it's really, really difficult to say, isn't it, really? Hopefully, Neil, we go into it thinking really positive things. You know, that's what I hope. So just win on Saturday because, you know, it could be a massive one for us. But Neil, it's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed it. Went over again on time. But No, mine as well. Once you get started, it's very difficult. But at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter, we appreciate the comments on YouTube. We really like those. Neil's great at keeping up to date with them, but lots people commenting on there, which we like. So just go to YouTube, type in Purely Arsenal, subscribe to us there and get the podcast a little bit earlier. Be able to see Neil's lovely face on it for an hour as well, which is good. You're looking good, mate. Looking good. But we're at Purely Arsenal FP. Feel free to comment on us on Twitter. We post all the links on Twitter. We're on Spotify. We're on all your regular podcast apps as well, Apple Podcasts. And we're on a great run of form. Let's keep it going. Let's beat Brentford at the weekend. Keep fingers crossed. Keep the faith. And up the Arsenal, boys. Here we go.